We're joined now by our good buddy, James Duffy. How you doing, J.D.?
I'm well, gentlemen. How are we?
Doing very well. And talking
you
about...
You know, I've been at TSN 5 years this year.
Yes.
I used to be the host of the NBA on TSN. People don't remember that.
Okay.
25 years. Never. Never in my 25 years I've been offered courtside seats.
Is that right?
Wow.
So I've been up in the boonies sometimes, you know, back rows. Never the courtside, so.
That's disappointing. And that's surprising to me, quite frankly, because, you know, I figured at some point you'd find a way to get in there, but.
You would think I would weasel my way somehow, but no, never the call.
Well, someday you'll join the club, because it is club, and it's a great club.
Sure that I will.
It's a great club, JD.
You know, I gotta say, when they showed you, I was half paying attention. Like Jeff, I'm a meticulous preparer, so I was deep into Masters prep last night and had the game on in the background and just happened to look up. And, you know, they even had that, like, the fancy camera. You know, like the cameras they have at the...
Yeah, it's like everything Masters seems like real life, kind of.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like the on your iPhone, the setting for, what is it, the picture you take where the background's blurry?
Like a
you
filter, guys, yeah.
Like a portrait or something.
Portrait mode. That's what it's like. It was like haze noodles in portrait mode, and they look like movie stars. And yeah, you know, I felt, instead of like joy for you, I just felt anger and jealousy.
Yeah, that's disappointing to hear. Maybe we can we call JD back? His phone is really going in and out. I want to really hear his jealousy.
No,
like,
I don't want to hear how good you looked in that stupid shot at the game.
Hashtag new profile pic on Twitter.
It does have to be. I will say this: when you posted the picture, Hayes, you and I, the comments about my salad.
Oh,
like we did bring it. It's all salad comments, like noodles with the dip, noodles with the dip. I'm like, all I did was touch up the sides. Like I would fully admit. That if I did like a Jimmy Benning shoe polish, I my hair is quite dark anyways.
Yes.
I just had some grays on the side that we did the little paint job.
And it looks good. I posted on my Instagram. You can go see it. Noodles, you look, it's high and tight, but it is not a gray
in sight. Did you screenshot and edit and cut yourself individually and post that, Hayes?
No, I just posted a picture of Noodles. And I posted some stories and stuff, but I'll get I'll get the new pickup soon just for you. I'll make sure to get it on Insta. All right, we got JD back. JD, go ahead. Continue to, you know,
I don't even know where I was.
Jealousy.
Like this was it. I don't have a landline anymore, and I was actually doing that interview from the basement.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a bad move in the first place. So I don't even know if you heard any of it.
No, we heard it. We heard that you really want to be courtside, and you're sending a vibe out to everyone at TSN.
Yeah, and just how good you guys looked.
Thank you.
You know,
yeah, we appreciate that. Maybe next, if you get them, bring O, because O didn't get a chance to do it last night. So you have an extra seat. Try to bring him. We were talking about the Canadian hockey landscape prior to having you on, and at best, we're talking three teams getting in. We know Toronto's in. We know Edmonton's in. It's very likely one of Winnipeg or Calgary. Nashville still has a shot. They do. But it's likely only one of Calgary or Winnipeg. So how are you feeling about the Canadian Cup draft? It'll be 30 years this spring, you know, with only three tickets. How are we feeling about this?
Well, I don't feel good just because of the past, and I think we've all been trained to feel horrible about it in Toronto and in Edmonton and basically every market. But I just think that eventually, like, the math just has to, just statistically, your number has to come up, whether that's the Leafs, whether that's the Oilers, maybe that's both of them in the same year that make the conference final and one of them gets to a cup final. I can't see this going on for another decade. It just doesn't make sense. This is not a rational answer of, you know, why I think the Leafs will go far or won't go far, or why I think the Oilers will or won't go far. I just think, you know, eventually it's gotta happen, right? This doesn't make sense statistically that with seven teams out of 31 and now 32 teams in the NHL that you can go this long without one of them winning. It doesn't make any sense. And so I think that one of those teams, if not both, are going to make a deep run this year, whether it's a cup final or not. That's the optimistic side of me.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. The probability would suggest at some point it has to happen. And I don't have a clear-cut answer on why it would be the Leafs over the Oilers or vice versa. I think you can make a compelling case for the West being weaker, but it is strengthening post-deadline. We've talked a lot about that this week. LA's
there
a lot
is
better.
As much as I try to be optimistic, would any of us be remotely surprised if there are no Canadian teams left after the first round? I think that's also a reasonable possibility.
Yes. It would not be a shock.
Ooh, that's ugly talk.
It wouldn't be a shock.
If it's Edmonton, LA, LA is kind of like one of the least talked about pretty good teams in the league this year, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
And that would be, I'd pick the Oilers in that series just of, you know, greater top end talent, but I think it's kind of a pick'em series, probably, when you look at it, right? They're basically dead even in points. And so, yeah, that's – and what you were talking about Nashville, I mean, Nashville, I think, has two games in hand on Winnipeg and Calgary, and what, they're 3 or 4 points back? So that's still dicey for the third Canadian team to get in. So there's a lot of possibilities for disaster from the Canadian end of it. But you have to think that, you know, between Toronto and Edmonton, one of them's going to make – at least some degree of a run.
With James Duthie, the Oilers with a big win last night in Vegas, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, he had basically 5 points before the second period started last night. It was wild.
Great. Good on that guy, Hazy, because I was like, when they re-signed him, I'm like, why would you want to continue having him around when you haven't done squat with him? And they stuck with the guy, mm-hmm. and he's rewarded them. I'm happy for
he
that.
He sure has. He's got 35 goals, 96 points. He's going to hit 100 points this year, and yet
he makes $5 million,
and
too.
He does make a ton of money, relatively speaking, and likely the most. This is going to be the most overshadowed 100-point season since like a Glenn Anderson season in the '80s, or so. You know, like is he the Glenn Anderson here? Trying to use an analogy where McDavid's right. going to have 150 points, Drysdale's going to have 125, Hyman has been great this year. Like, how do we focus on Nugent Hopkins when it's so easy to focus on the other guys?
Well, I think the Nuge was one of those guys when he re-signed. Didn't you get the feeling that it was one of those home team, hometown, valuing a player more than the rest of the league does in some sense, right? How you get, you know, the Toronto market has been guilty of that in the past, how you get attached to a guy and say, oh, we got to keep the Nuge around. But, and I think he sort of was always labeled as an underachiever because he was, you know, a first overall pick, and though that comes with something that you have trouble shaking throughout your career unless you're a superstar. But I think he's always been a really good player, and something like this is I just more indicative of why I like the Oilers is because their top end is better or as good as any top end in the league, and I think he fits in that conversation now. When we used to talk about the Oilers' top end, it was, you know, McDavid, Dreisaitl, maybe it's toss Kane in there as well. But Nugent Hopkins is right in that mix.
Yeah,
it's,
he
it's
is.
Interesting. You know, the other thing, too, is with Nugent Hopkins, like, there will be a conversation probably on this show a couple of years from now going, like, that's a long-term deal. It's not looking as good. But I think Ken Holland, what he had to do is if he wanted to keep a player, because if you're going to go and replace him on the free agent market, it might cost you more and you may not trust that player. Like Nugent Hopkins, I would argue, is a big part of that power play. You can just say, well, it's Drysdale and McDavid, but mm-hmm. Nugent Hopkins actually runs the half wall and does a really good job with it. And that power play was, what, 3 for 3 last night? Again, like I think they're at 32.7, which is, you know, a modern day record since you've been tracking it. But he's a guy that adds a lot of value, but it's second-tier value when you have those superstars. I think he just kind of complements. He's a great complementary player to whatever you have going.
Absolutely.
The other thing, just guys, just away from the Oilers, we've been talking nonstop for the last few months about how crazy the East is going to be in the first round, because for the longest time it was the 6 top teams in the league. Look at the West right now, and The 6 teams in the top 3 seeds in the 2 divisions are, so Minnesota, just the last 10 column in the standings, okay? Vegas, 8-2 in their last 10. LA, 7-1-2. Edmonton, 8-1-1. So there's the Pacific. The Central, Minnesota, 7-1-2. Colorado, 9-1. And Dallas, 6-3-1. That looks pedestrian compared. You have 6 teams all on heaters with a couple of weeks left in the season. So, you know, suddenly the West looked kind of lackluster. I think the West playoffs could be terrific.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. And obviously the Masters is always terrific. You mentioned that you were preparing last night. And while you're preparing to get there, break down the percentages of preparation. Tiger Woods, the Canadians in the field, and everyone else. Like, how does the prep work?
Well, I do this goofy little sheet that looks like somebody in grade five cramming for an exam, where I actually do equal prep. So I have this one page of paper. I'm an old school guy who still likes to write things down when there's computers that do all this stuff for you. I don't know why. And when we're doing those bonus coverage hours, I never really know what player is going to pop up on my screen. It's not like Jim Nantz, who has like four producers talking to him. We're just picking up the feeds. And so, you know, suddenly there's JT Poston or something. So I try to write like a couple things about each guy. So I have this one page of paper that has everybody in the field. I write this out by hand. What country they're from, how old they are, what's their world ranking, how many Masters is this for them, what's their best finish, and then one little other note, you know, like won the, you know, the Asian amateur qualify or something.
Okay.
So that's what I'm doing right now, and then I'll get further into it. And focus
I love
Rory, Rahm, and Tiger and the boys a little bit more.
Those guys, but you can figure out, right? You can you know where you're going with the big boys.
Well,
you got Bob with you.
Usually I can cheat like that, though. Like when I'm hosting hockey, you talk about the big stars, right?
Right.
It's like, oh, on trade deadline, if somebody trades for a fourth line winger or an AHL guy, don't approach him. It's a rule. Oh, and I have. I can do
nobody
the same
cares
thing hosting. But in the Masters, when I'm actually doing live coverage of the Masters and we have all these feeds jumping back and forth, I actually have to know everybody in the field. When let's go to Amen Corner, you know, and it's it's, you know, Tom Hoagie with an approach shot. So so I kind of have to know a little bit about everybody, but I think it's going to be, and I'm not just trying to hype it because we're covering it, I think it's going to be the most fascinating Masters week in a long time. And, you know, we kind of say that every year. Tiger showed up last year and that was something, but I don't remember so many storylines. You know, forget the Tiger and, you know, Rory and Rahm and all the great players right now and all that, but with the LIV guys there, and there's a bunch of them. I there's more than I thought when I started going down the list. It's like 16 or something.
Yeah, there is.
And the ball changes being discussed and everything else. There's going to be more juice Monday to Wednesday, I think, than we've ever seen at a Masters week. You know, how awkward is it on the grounds with all these guys here and the champions dinner and everything else. And as much as I'm not a big LIV fan and everything, all the guys that are going, I don't necessarily blame any of them for doing it, but I'm not a Patrick Reed guy or a Phil Mickelson guy, but man, if one of those dudes was in it on Sunday afternoon going down the stretch with Rory or Rahm or Spieth or something, that would be spectacular.
Jimmy, we were talking about Augusta National and how it's all prim and proper there and green jackets and all the garbage is green. But do you think they have any idea of the entertainment value in a Rory Reed pairing? Or as the Rory types made it clear to Augusta National, they better not do something like that? Do they already know that? And as far as Sunday at 5:30 in the afternoon, what do you think is the best kind of theater? Like, is it still Tiger and Rory? Is it a LIV guy with Rory? What is it?
Yeah, well, I'll answer the second part first. It's always Tiger. I mean, if somehow Tiger's in the mix, that will trump everything eternally in golf. It's just the way it is. And particularly now when, from what we've seen from him, the difficulty and even walk, it's the toughest walk in golf. And to do it for four rounds when he's played, you know, one tournament in a year, I think it would be incredible if he could somehow get in the mix. For me now, always, you know, Tiger making the cut seems to be an achievement in itself, and that would to me be what I'm watching. Can he make the cut? And if he's in the hunt, that's a heck of a bonus. But I think it's what you just said. Outside of that, I think Rory has sort of become the face of the PGA Tour. Plus, he's eternally trying to finish off his career Grand Slam at Augusta, and so Rory and Reed probably would be the best sort of hero versus villain. I know not everybody sees Rory as a hero, but you know what I'm saying.
Do you think Tiger makes the cut, Jimmy?
Yeah, I'd say yes. I'd say his game's too good. I think he makes the cut and then fades, kind of like last year. on the weekend. I felt like he played great in the opening round last year and sort of gutted out the cut and then really had nothing left on Saturday and Sunday. And I think just physically for a 47-year-old man who's on one leg, essentially, that's probably realistic. Again, if anybody could defy us, it's him. But and even, like I said, making the cut is something, right? It's horrible the way, you know, we perceive Tiger now that we still want him so badly, or most people do anyway, to be in it. But making the cut is a heck of an achievement for a guy who's not playing any competitive golf, really.
Big time. All right, JD, well, safe travels down there. We'll be talking to you early next week. We're looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast, and we can't wait for it.
Thank you so much, boys. Appreciate it.
You got it. James Duffy, you'll be down there at the Masters. You'll be heading down there this weekend, and as of Monday, it is go time on TSN. Throughout the week and throughout the weekend, and, of course, here on TSN Radio as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a fun week. And you got the Valero Texas Open going on. That is a rat race for that last spot, right? Like, someone wins that and flies to Augusta. There are guys playing for FedEx Cup points. You know, there's money on the line because a lot of the big guys aren't playing. But what's interesting is LIV Golf is playing this weekend. They're playing in Orlando. And I'm sure some of their big dogs, I don't know who it is, DJ, Koepka, or whatever, probably used to have a history of never playing the week before a major.
Dude, don't ever say Koepka's name on the show again. I used to like the guy and think he was an edgy kind of golfer with a burning passion to win. That garbage that he pulled in Florida doing that to Aaron Ekblad, when I just said, screw this
he
guy.
He spoke on it. Do you want to come back and hear what he had to say about it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We got some audio from Koepka about him, you know, goofing on Ekblad. We'll get to that. Alek Manoah in about 15 minutes. Role play level of concern at 5:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.